Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Welcome back. This is a audio blog about conference submissions, so responses to call for proposals. I mean, conference season comes around several times a year, right? Which means somewhere, right now, there's a reviewer opening a proposal that says something like, "This session will explore the evolving landscape of identity." And people, reviewers, are really tired. After years of reviewing conference proposals myself and now sitting as a content chair for a large conference, I can tell you right now that rejection is very rarely about the topic itself. It's usually far more about the proposals that are unclear, or they're sort of middle of the road, or they're just a little too eager to pitch. So yeah, most submissions don't fail because the idea is bad. They fail because the proposal doesn't help reviewers understand what the speaker is actually trying to deliver. So if you would like your submission to avoid being just tossed straight in the bin, let's talk about what actually helps. And let's start with sort of the most obvious thing these days, and that's the use of generative AI. If you want to use AI to help clarify your thinking, that is actually completely reasonable. I use AI frequently myself to find gaps in my reasoning and bias in my own posts. However, using AI to generate a full abstract based on a handful of buzzwords, that's actually painfully obvious to the reviewer, and it's usually not obvious in your favor. Reviewers read hundreds, sometimes thousands, of submissions. Patterns jump out actually pretty quickly, and AI-shaped abstracts tend to sound polished, strangely empty. Language is really smooth. The structure is very tidy. And yet, it's all of a type. It's all of a kind. There's nothing that jumps out that says, oh, this is going to be interesting. No, I'm not actually talking about the use of M-dashes. M-dashes are perfectly good punctuators and have been given a bad rap. Just wanted to put that out there. Okay, so what works much better is using AI to support your thinking, not replace it. Use it to outline your ideas. Use it to tighten your language. Use it to sanity check your structure. But the core argument, the reason this session should exist, needs to come from you. If your proposal could be swapped with someone else's and no one would notice, that's a problem. Now let's be clear about something else. Most conference review processes are absolutely looking for explicit signals about who is the intended audience and what are the expected outcomes. Reviewers do want to know who the session is for. They want to know what attendees will learn, and the eventual audience definitely wants to know what's in it for me. So yes, you do need to make these things visible, but where submissions start to struggle is in how that message gets delivered. As Gen AI becomes more common in the submission process, many abstracts are starting to arrive with like the exact same scaffolding. In this session, attendees will learn, or participants will gain insight into, or this presentation is designed for. Now, individually, these phrases are actually fine. They exist because they convey useful information, but at scale, they create a different problem. When reviewers read hundreds of abstracts that all follow that exact same mechanical outline, the same rhythm, the same structure, the same careful but generic tone, it all starts to blur together. And fairly or not, that sameness raises the concern, is the session going to feel just as cookie cutter? So strong submissions still make the value proposition unmistakably clear. They just do it in the speaker's own voice with language that reflects the real ownership of the material. Think of it this way also, that your abstract has two audiences. First are the gatekeepers, the reviewers that are actually building the program. They need clarity on fit, level, and expected takeaways. But the second is the eventual attendees. They're scanning for a simple question, really, what's in it for me? The submissions that stand out manage to satisfy both groups at once. They clearly signal outcomes, but they do it with enough specificity and personality that the session feels intentional rather than assembled from a template. If you're of an age, you'll understand this thing. You're not filling out a Mad Libs. You're making the case that your session deserves one of a very limited number of spots. Now, here's another pattern that has puzzled me on and off. If the submission form allows 5,000 characters and you submit something the length of the tweet, what are you thinking? I mean, reviewers are going to be left guessing, and guessing very rarely works in your favor. A strong abstract, like, it gives you enough detail to answer the questions reviewers always have. What specifically will the audience learn? Who is this for? Why now? Why the speaker? And why is this more interesting than the 20 other submissions on the same topic? Reviewers are also looking for signals that the talk is grounded in real experience. I mean, you don't need to drop your entire bio in the abstract. Please don't do that. But some kind of indicator that there is deployment experience behind this, that there is research depth, that there is operational lessons, that helps reviewers distinguish between lived practices and a theoretical commentary. So thin abstracts, you know, in the form of a tweet, often signal that the talk isn't fully formed yet or that the submitter didn't invest much effort into the proposal. So why would the reviewers put in much effort to figure out if it fits? So yeah, that kind of interpretation does not help your odds. I'm not saying you need to write a novel, but you do need to respect the space you've been given. Now that said, your titles do not need to be a novel in and of themselves. Shorter titles generally do perform better. They're easier to scan. They're easier to place in a crowded agenda. But shorter should not mean vague. A strong title gives reviewers and attendees a quick, concrete hint about what's inside. You don't need a paragraph for it, but you do need some kind of signal. One or two well-chosen keywords can make a difference between unclear and, oh yeah, I know that's something I want to hear about. If a reviewer has to read your abstract just to figure out, okay, what's the basic topic, then the title isn't doing enough work. Another thing about your abstract, and it is not an uncommon mistake, right? Depending on what you're proposing, your abstract is not an incident report, right? It's not a market analysis of a product. It is not a standards deep dive in and of itself, and it's definitely not a product pitch. It is a story. At a high level, your abstract should make three things pretty clear: the problem you're addressing, why this audience should care, and what they will walk away from able to do or understand differently. Think of it as more like a movie trailer, not a full how-to script. If your abstract reads like it belongs in a governance memo or an after-action report, reviewers are probably going to struggle to see how it becomes an engaging session. All right, next thing. Yes, I have a whole list. Your acronyms. Our industry has them. They have them in spades. But you know, we don't all exactly have the same one in all our little niches. So, you know, you may live and breathe in your corner of the industry acronyms that make you live with. Of course, everybody knows that. But your reviewers might not be exactly in that same space. And this is especially true for region-specific regulations, niche working groups, or internal program names, or like emerging specifications. So the first time you use an acronym, even an abstract, spell it out. It's a small move, but it signals something pretty important, that you know how to communicate beyond your immediate peer group, and review panels do notice that. Okay, next one. Please do not submit dozens of proposals. I mean, I understand the instinct, truly. Surely, if you throw enough ideas at reviewers, something will stick and you'll get that free conference pass. But submitting 10 or 12 variations to the same conference very rarely improves your chances. I mean, from the program side, it usually signals a lack of focus rather than the breadth of experience that you might be hoping for. What works far better is select your strongest two or three ideas and invest real effort in sharpening those. Make the value to the audience unmistakable. Show that you've thought about fit, about timing, and about relevance. I mean, this is not a game of horseshoes and hand grenades, and what gets closest wins. Quality is going to beat your volume, like, every single time. Now, another thing that makes reviewers sort of question what you were thinking is a mismatch between the format you selected and the content you provided. So most conferences offer multiple session types. There's panels. There are short 20-minute sessions, and then there are like longer deep dive sessions. If you're submitting a panel, please include the panelists, not just a to be determined, not we will invite industry leaders. Tell us actually who's going to be on the panel, because that's a really influential piece of information that will help us understand is this thing real and useful? The reviewers need to understand the balance of perspectives and whether the conversation is likely to be substantive. Now, if you're submitting a short form session, say 20, 25 minutes, be realistic about how many voices can meaningfully contribute. Five speakers in that time frame is not going to happen. It usually signals one of two outcomes. Either everyone is going to get a rushed 3 minutes, or the session is basically a single presenter with expensive background decoration. Neither one is compelling. On the flip side, if you're proposing a longer form session, do make sure the material has enough depth and narrative to pull sustained attention. Reviewers are asking themselves, for those long form sessions, will people actually stay in their seats for this? So the goal here is alignment. When you're choosing your format, when you've got your speaker lineup, when the scope of the content is reinforcing all of that, reviewers can much more easily picture the session succeeding on the stage. And if they can do that, then your odds improve a whole lot. Let's take a quick moment to talk about vendor pitches. So, pitch decks that come in disguised as conference talks. Now, many of the strongest subject matter experts in our field work for vendors, and that by in and of itself is not a problem. Conferences depend on practitioners who are close to real deployments and real customer pain. But the problem is when that submission reels like it's trying to sneak in a product pitch past the program committee. Now, most large non-vendor specific conferences operate under some version of the rule, do not pitch your product, do not use your product as the only example, and don't assume that you can use your company template or splash your logo everywhere in the presentation. If your abstract or your eventual slides feel like a thin wrapper around a sales story, the reviewer is going to notice and the audience is going to notice, and it's not going to go well. The sessions that land well focus more on the problem space first, not the product. They draw on patterns across multiple deployments. They acknowledge trade-offs. They teach something the audience can use, even if they never buy anything from the speaker's company. So here's a simple gut check. If you removed your company name from the abstract, would the session still make sense and still feel useful? Another additional credibility signal, especially for vendors, is if you're presenting a case study, include the customer whenever possible. And now I know that's not always feasible because some organizations, understandably, prefer not to participate in that way, leaving you both necessarily and unfortunately vague. But when a customer is willing to co-present, it materially strengthens the proposal. It tells the reviewers that this is grounded in real-world experience, not just the vendor's point of view. And yeah, people absolutely notice the difference. However, if that's not where you're going, your submission might need another pass. Now, here's something I learned in kindergarten and first grade and second grade and third grade. Read the instructions. A surprising amount of what I've just covered is actually already sitting in most conference submission guidance. Program teams usually tell you what they're looking for, they outline the topic tracks, they explain the conference theme, they tell you how much space you have to make your case. And yet every year, there are many submissions that clearly have not taken advantage of that information. So yeah, read the instructions first. Do not skim them. Do not assume that they are the same year after year. Actually read them. Use the fields you're given. Answer the questions the form is actually asking. Make it easy for reviewers and future attendees to see the value of your session. So, wrapping up, right? Behind every conference agenda is a group of humans trying to build something coherent and genuinely useful for attendees. The submissions that rise to the top tend to do one thing very well. They make the reviewer's job easy. They are clear about the problem, they are specific about the audience, and they're really honest about the outcomes. In a competitive year, and let's be frank, most years are competitive years, that clarity matters more than clever phrasing or buzzword density. Help the reviewer see the session, and then you'll be ahead of a large portion of the field that have been submitting this year. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to reading your abstract in a future conference submission. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.